Hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 70. It's me, Rafe Blanford, and with me are...
Steve Litchfield.
And Ewan Spence.
Thanks, guys. So we've got a feature-packed show this week. There's a lot to get through. So without further ado, I think the first thing we'll talk about is the new device of the week, which is, of course, the Nokia E52. Steve, perhaps you would like to introduce us to this new device.
Yeah, I have to say this one caught us all by surprise. I certainly wasn't expecting a new E-series device so soon. The E52 can be thought of in various ways. It's either a traditional number keypad version of the E55 already announced, or it can be thought of as a huge upgrade from the E51, which is a very popular device. My wife has one, so I'm especially keen to introduce her to the E52. Or it can simply be a companion to things like the E75. It's got a very similar software spec, for example. The basics underlying bullet points are a 1500 milliamp-hour battery, so exactly the same battery as in things like the E71. And I just cannot see how they managed to fit that huge battery in such a small form factor and still keep the phone at 9mm thick. So kudos to Nokia's hardware design guys there. I think that's an awesome inclusion. The GPS, as you'd expect, S63rd edition, feature pack 2, Wi-Fi, 3-megapixel camera, Ovi, Nokia messaging, a 3.5mm headphone jack, always welcome to see, USB charging. There's a noise cancellation on your phone calls, which is another something that's new. It comes with all sorts of software bundles, including a free 60-day trial for files and Ovi. There's probably a Nokia Maps trial period as well, right? Do you know about that?
Yes, there should be 3 months, but that will depend on the market that you buy the device in.
Okay, there's also a 2.4-inch screen, of course, the same as on things like the E75. The weight is only 98 grams, so it really is quite a dinky little phone. All round, I'm quite impressed by this. Some of Nokia's hardware releases in the last couple of years have left me a bit cold, but the E52 really hits a sweet spot in terms of the size and convenience for the sheer power that's underneath the hood. Rafe, what were your first impressions?
Yes, I'd agree. I mean, this is effectively a sister device to the E55, which I got to see at Mobile World Congress, and they've just changed the keypad over. It's also based on the new hardware platform that Nokia sort of, it's also being used, I think, in the 5630 and E55, among other devices. So there's also things like a compass, that's a magnetometer sensor in there. So in terms of the features packed into a small space, it really is amazing. And when you see the battery sitting in this particular phone, you can't really understand where the rest of the phone is. You know, there's a where they've packed everything in. It just doesn't seem to make logical sense. So it is a fantastic example of industrial design. And, you know, we always talk about phones with big screens and video this and video that. But at the end of the day, a lot of people still want, a voice-centric device. And the E52 is ideal for that. It's pretty good value, too. I think it's going to come in at about €250. So that'll probably translate into a street price of maybe £260. But I'd expect that to drop fairly rapidly towards the £200 mark with a bit of time. Yes, I mean... It really is a nice upgrade, and I was a big fan of the E51 for quite a while, so I'm really glad to see this come along. It was obviously a logical step forward from the E55. It's also worth noting that it runs feature pack 2 of S63rd edition, so the performance is significantly better than the feature pack 1 devices. And all in all, I think this is a very welcome device. It fits into the portfolio nice. It's not top end or anything. But I suspect this is a device that could do very well, because the E55 is a gorgeous piece of design. Comes in different bits of colour. That's because it uses aluminium as opposed to stainless steel, which means they can anodise it in different colours. So I wouldn't be at all surprised. I think there's 3 colours on launch, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see multiple colours coming on down later on the road. And, that sort of thing is very popular.
It's also one of those phones which won't scare IT departments when you have that as a work phone. It's, put it next to something like the N97. The N97 just makes people go, wow, what's that going to be able to do? It's a full computer, it's a keyboard, and leaves them feeling a little bit sometimes overawed or worried about it. This enterprise device, especially compared to the other E-series devices, just looks normal. And I think that that's a very important thing when you're aiming at that mid to lower tier market. the price point, when you look at the features and compare that to something like, you know, the original S60 phones, is absolutely amazing. And I think the key phrase was one that you said, Steve, there in the introduction, as you listed the features, you said, as you expect, on things like GPS, on things like Ovi, and things like multimedia support.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And, you know, of course, it's S60, so it's all the bits that come along with that for businesses such as, you know, Quick Office, Nokia Messaging, Mail for Exchange, which really is quite a mature offering now, and also some of the device management features. So, you know, although it's obviously voice-centric and it moves away from sort of the typical multimedia smartphone that we talk about, it is still a smartphone and all of the power that encompasses. And I think that's, you know, increasingly important as businesses do more with their mobile devices. So I think changing tack to the other end of the spectrum and talking about games, I believe there's been a new N-Gage release this week with something of a retro feel, Ewan. Is that right? Oh.
It's almost right. I'm tempted to say it's not a new release at all. Pandemonium came out on what's rapidly becoming N-Gage Tuesday. And for those of us who had a penchant for this on the original N-Gage way back in, 1874 or something, it's the return of a platform game, which is essentially plays in a 2D environment but looks 3D. So when you, instead of just running along a long straight path, that might be a curvy path on a bridge. But what that does is it gives you a wonderful looking game, but your controls are left, right, and jump. You also have the fire button as well if you pick up a special power. Essentially, you and your best friends have opened up a treasure chest that has released lots of ills around the world, and you have to go around collecting them all up again before your mum and dad find out. Oh, bless. Generally, it's an excuse to run around some increasingly bizarre medieval and fantasy-style scenarios, maps, and worlds to try and collect all the little tiny glowing things while jumping on the heads of all the things that are trying to bite you. This is the thing. Pandemonium's been out on PlayStation and platforms for many years, so it's not essentially a new game. It doesn't break any boundaries. But what it does is it does presentation, it does gameplay, it does graphics, it does addictiveness, it does controls all very, very well. I'm not yet sat next, put it next to the original N-Gage, and seen it running on S60 V7, but when I do, I'm not expecting there to be that much of a difference beyond the increase of the size of the screen resolution. Pandemonium was a good B-list title on the original N-Gage, and it looks to be the same on next-gen N-Gage.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great summary. Thank you, Ewan. I think I'm right in saying they've added the cutscenes from the PlayStation version compared to the original, and as you say, the graphics are better. It's at a higher resolution. So it does add something, but it probably underlines the importance of how important gameplay is in these devices. If you have a game that works well, it actually can sort of, you know, almost be perennial.
Indeed, yes, and it's also nice to see that Nokia have given the demo on this a good 3 or 4 levels rather than 5 seconds of a game of poker. You can actually have a really good feel for the experience just playing through the free downloadable demo. And of course, it goes without saying that N-Gage is still one of the few of the major gaming platforms that provide a free demo for every single title.
Okay, thank you, Ewan. So I think it's time to move back to hardware, and it's the N96, which was a slightly maligned piece of hardware, I think, for understandable reasons. It's still sold pretty well, but it's recently got a firmware update to version 20. Steve, can you tell us about that?
Yes, it's been a long time coming. I borrowed a Rafe's N96 many, many months ago, thinking I'd jump on the firmware updates as they rolled off Nokia's production line, reporting on all that was new. And I sat with it for month after month after month, and nothing happened. And I gave it back to Rafe in the end. I thought, well, that's it. Nokia have forgotten it. Well, it turns out they haven't quite forgotten it, because version 20.050 is a pretty major update. The previous, I think, was version 12. This brings personalization settings for audio themes, much better email support, including the new Nokia messaging, of course, and the email wizard, improvements to Wi-Fi, improvements to camera quality, improvements to flashlight video support, and so on and so forth. And the device is also snappier in every way. So a huge update. I thoroughly recommend it. I still think there's probably more to come from the N96. When I was playing with it, I got the impression that there was really a lot of power there. I know it hasn't got the separate graphics chip as the N95 had, but did have dedicated audio and video decoding and encoding hardware, and that'll make a big difference. But I did get the feeling there was a lot of power there that could be tapped, and I still feel there's a version 21 or even a version 30 firmware installed for the N96 in the next 6 months or so.
Thanks, Steve. As you say, I was actually the one who upgraded the firmware on this, and I'm glad to see the email come in, because the email wizard that Nokia recently introduced on their devices does make things a lot easier. How, just to make a complaint, it's a shame that they included Nokia messaging version 1 rather than the version 1.1 that's been out now for a little while. And that just means it's an older version, doesn't work so well with multiple email accounts. And perhaps the bigger fly in the ointment still is in the Nokia email wizard, there isn't really a clear definition between sort of a traditional email setup and using the Nokia messaging client and service. You know, there should be a clearer definition between them so you know what you're doing when you start the wizard. I think that will come in time, but at the moment it's not clear and it's really not a good situation. Not to mention that some of the names are all a bit confusing when you've got a messaging application, a Nokia messaging client and service. It's not entirely clear what's going on. So that's one thing, at least in my book, that needs to be fixed.
One other thing to mention, very important feature, mustn't forget to mention it. When you slide the slider on the N96 open and closed, you now get a swoosh noise. Very important, that. Very important.
Yeah, it's very important, and I'm sure for the people out there, it's door opening sounds from Star Trek or your favourite sci-fi show.
I was about to ask, is it programmable?
It is programmable. That's part of sort of the audio themes and the slider controls. Actually, the slider controls, in a way, are very welcome as well. That's sort of controlling whether the keypad locks or not, or whether a phone call is answered when you open the slide. And that's sort of thing, you know, little details that are typically added in the later firmware, which I'm glad to see. The only fly in the ointment is the audio sound is about half a second behind you actually opening the slide, which kind of spoils the effect. So,
that's something to fix in version 21.
It's the N96 all round. Yes, great, great, great. And just feels at the very end, isn't it?
Well, it's a bit unkind. I mean, the N96 has had a hammering amongst geek circles, but actually, in terms of sales, you know, it's no N95, but it certainly hasn't done too badly off the back of perhaps the success of the N95. But people do like the big screen. If you're not a phone geek, there's a lot to be said for the N96. It'll be interesting to see whether the same is repeated with the N97, and I think we'll talk about that a bit later in this podcast. But first, I just want to take things into the techie realm. And that's the most significant announcement probably that you'll see this year in terms of the future of the Symbian and S60 platforms. And this was a post on the Symbian Foundation blog talking about the release roadmap. And there's a post on the site about this, but I just want to highlight one thing. And that's the proposal in Symbian 4, and this is, in other words, 4 releases time from what we are at the moment. There'll be Symbian 2 and 3 first. And Symbian 4, we're talking about probably the beginning of 2011 for the first devices. And the proposal is to replace the S60 or Avcon UI with a Qt-based UI, which is provisionally called Orbit, along with some direct UI, which is basically the interaction model that the UI uses. So effectively what this means is the S60 UI that we use at the moment will be replaced by something that's based on Qt. And Qt is, of course, the cross-application graphical framework that's popular, especially on the Linux desktops. I think it's the KDE desktop that uses. I hope I've got that the right way around. And it's used in many applications. And Qt is a company that, of course, Nokia bought relatively recently. But this is a way, as far as the end user is concerned, is it will lead to a radical refresh of the S60 UI. Initially, it's going to be on the touch side of things, but I would expect later on it to also be on non-touch devices. So I suspect this is the point at which we'll see a major, major update to the UI. Until then, it's really going to be about graphical acceleration and maybe some eye candy without, and there won't be any major changes to the actual framework. But as I say, with this Orbit UI, we will see very major changes. Now, it may sound like it's a long way away, but, you know, 2011, we're talking about 2 years before we can, 2.5 years before we expect to see this on devices. And one of the reasons they've announce it now is to get some input from the community as to whether this is a good idea. And developers, for example, will be worried about this because there'll be a break in the compatibility. Inevitably, the APIs that control the UI, the Avcon APIs, will be being replaced or depreciated. It is worth stating that, as I say, it's just a proposal at the moment, and there may well be mechanisms in place to kind of alleviate this compatibility break. But it's an interesting one to see. But it does sort of underline, I think, Symbian's open source credentials that it'll be moving to this Qt UI, and has quite interesting implications for the cross-platform nature as well. We could very well see Nokia running a single sort of graphical layer or Qt-based UI across all of its platforms in the near future. Well, near future, I should say, a couple of years' time, but also on some of their desktop applications. It's quite possible we'll see quite a lot of unification going on, and this has obviously implications for how easy it is to develop things, also the time of development, but perhaps most importantly, the fact that you'll only have to develop it once. It is something of a holy grail for developers. But this is one that we'll be watching. As I say, it's a techie topic that people don't really need to worry about just yet. Even developers probably just need to bear in mind that it may be happening. If they want to put some input, go and talk to the Symbian Foundation. But watch this space, as it will be one of the major changes in the Symbian ecosystem going forward. So I think that's probably enough tech topic for now. But we're still going to remain in the realms of sort of techiness, because I think we'll talk about the Nokia N97 now, the specs for which were formally released on Forum Nokia, I think, sometime last week, and they've caused something of a reaction, haven't they, Steve?
Yes, unsurprisingly, geeks across the world have been railing at the fact that if you go to www.forum.nokia.com/devices/N97, there's the full tech specs, including the fact that it's a single CPU, which we kind of suspected. There's no graphics coprocessor again. It's a very similar to the Nokia 5800. And the CPU type is ARM11, again the same. The CPU speed, this which is the figure that seems to have got everyone's attention, is 434 megahertz. Now, this is for a flagship device, and as Rafe and I will probably comment in a moment, speed isn't everything. The Nokia 5800 was just below 400 megahertz, so this is they've slightly overclocked the same chip to give a bit more speed. I think before Rafe gives his impression, my impression is that the Nokia 5800 with the version 21 firmware is pretty nippy in most aspects. There are only a couple of things which are too slow, and the N97 is obviously having the benefit of extra software development time and can learn from any lessons learnt in the 5800, and it's got that slightly faster processor speed. So I'm not too worried. The 5800, the biggest bottleneck in terms of performance for smartphones for me tends to be playing games and playing back videos. They're the two areas you really notice it. The 5800 is actually pretty good at playing back videos. I can play back MP4s that I created myself or downloaded off the net, and there are very few buffering problems and very few glitches. Games are a different matter. I think games, top-end games, as people have seen on the likes of Apple's iPhone, will always need a dedicated graphics co-processing, which is why the N95 did so well in that department, but recent devices haven't, and why the iPhone's doing particularly well at the moment. So I think the N97, like the 5800, will struggle in terms of games. It is N-Gage compatible, and there will be compatible games, but I suspect they won't really be all action, stunning 3D rendered games like on the iPhone. For general operation, though, the N97 is very much pitched as the everyman's all-round flagship, doing a bit of everything. I'm just running down the list of specs away from the processor speed. The sheer list of things, from proximity sensor, accelerometer, ambient light sensor, magnetometer. There's a whole list of electronics basically building in features they've been trialing in previous devices all into the one device. So this is very much an everyman's Swiss Army knife device. I think 434 megahertz is probably about right, considering they're trying to balance things in terms of performance and battery life. And Nokia have obviously got to steer a much finer line than perhaps some other manufacturers. Things like the Samsung Omni HD, they're going all out for absolute speed and performance, and never mind the cost. Which is fair enough, and maybe they can afford to do that, and I do wish them well. But the N97 coming from Nokia, being much, much bigger and perhaps more as expected of them across a much wider range of consumers, I think they're trying to steer a middle ground, and it's a delicate balance to be struck, certainly.
And Ewan, do you have an opinion on this as sort of someone who quite likes his powerful devices?
Indeed, I do. I think the first thing is just to reiterate Steve's comments in terms of processor speed not being everything. David Wood once famously compared the fact that the processor speed on the Scion PDAs, ka-ching, there's the money, was a quarter of that of the comparable Windows Mobile devices back in the day, yet we're still delivering a faster experience with longer battery life. And that battery life issue is actually a really big one. If you look at the iPhone, and I've been playing Flight Control. Thank you very much for that, Steve. And it's quite addictive, but it drains the battery in like an hour or two. When I go out on trips, I just don't want to play that game because it kills the battery. You can play MP3s for like 10, 20 hours on an iPhone. Start playing some of the games that need a bit of graphics handling. And Flight Control is essentially top-down. And it just completely and utterly destroys the battery life. So getting that balance is actually one of those really hard things for any mobile phone manufacturer to do. They have to have a philosophy to decide where they want to go. It requires very tight, very compact, and very aggressive use of code in the CPU and in the applications that are running themselves. And so yes, there is a stats battle, but there's not really been the sort of race for specifications in the mobile phone market that you've seen, for example, on the desktop. RAM is kind of stabilized out, which will give you about 100 meg or so, give or take 25, or depending on what Steve feels like is needed at the time. Memory seems to be the same sort of inbuilt with, we're now experiencing large amounts of gigabyte storage on the devices. But really, I think that the mobile phone has transcended a specification battle and moved towards a usage battle.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're both spot on here. And I think the important thing here is, as far as techie people are concerned, they're disappointed that this isn't the next generation of the chipsets, which would be the OMAP 3 or equivalent from another manufacturer. And that's indeed what the Omnia HD is running. But I think you're absolutely right, Ewan. Most people don't look at the specifications. And we're talking about the sort of top 10% of users, possibly, who do realize about these things and will complain. The rest might go, "Ooh, I wish it did such and such a thing." But they're probably not going to have a necessary appreciation for that. I think more than that, you also have to be very careful when you're talking about these kind of technical areas. Because the N97 actually has some extra hardware in there compared to the 5800. Now, Nokia haven't released the exact details on this, but my understanding is there's actually some video processors and some audio processors that sit on the system on a chip that are different to what we've had in previous devices. Hence, we can actually expect some better performance out of the N97 than we had from earlier devices. Now, I've had a play with the N97 on several occasions, and it's been in the prototype stage, and really, really, you can't judge these things until you get, the final version. But the N97 was pretty nippy and played back video extremely well, even, when you threw some stuff at it that was, not optimized for it. So I actually think this is a completely red herring, especially with regard to the processor speed. I don't think that's relevant at all. I think you could make an argument that it's a shame there isn't 3D accelerated graphics in there and a graphic coprocessor. However, the number of things in the platform that are actually set up to take advantage of this are precisely zero at the moment. Yes, the platform could be rewritten, and indeed Symbian Foundation release 2 or 3, that is going to be part of the platform. We're going to have accelerated graphics in Avcon. It's partly made by Screenplay, but at the moment it's not there. So in day-to-day usage, there is no point. The one area where there would be a point is in gaming, but even now there are very few, it's OpenGL really we're talking about here, OpenGL accelerated games. And would there be more if there was a device available? Yes. Is it the most important thing? No, I don't think it is when you consider, as Steve was saying, the cost implications and the compromise between two areas. I think, Nokia are going here for a device which isn't really about the technical specifications. It's about the form factor you're getting it, the combination of the touchscreen and the QWERTY keyboard, which I think it has its own problems, which we'll talk about when we get our hands on them. So for me, this is a complete red herring. I do have sympathy with the people who would like to see the most powerful device. And yes, you might argue the N97 should be that in one sense, but I think this is where there's a dichotomy between having a super device and one that's the flagship in terms of sales, or, you know, the device you hold out. You know, I might compare something like the N82 to the N95. You know, the N82 had better camera performance, and we've all said it's a device we really like. However, in terms of sales, it wasn't that popular. The more all-round device, the N95, did better, and I think you could draw a similar conclusion with the N97 and possibly the Omnia HD, or possibly hardware that Nokia will be coming out with at a later date. I think the N97, from what I've seen of it, is extremely well balanced in terms of its offering, in terms of what it gives to users, and at the end of the day, it's that which sells it in the shops, not whether it's the whizziest thing in the world.
It's worth mentioning there, Ewan, you were talking about, we've been used to devices with around about 80 megabytes of RAM. That's things of the sort of N95, N79, N96 class. Because of the extra size of the OS in S65th edition, the 5800 I think has about 45 megabytes of free RAM. The N97 apparently has about 50 or so. Hopefully these figures will rise gradually as the firmware gets optimized. To be honest, 50 megabytes is enough RAM for most people for most tasks. Again, if you look, using the iPhone as an example, I've done a fair amount of gaming on things like the iPod Touch, and it has a similar amount of RAM in terms of getting up towards the 100 megabyte mark, but an awful lot of that is used up by the most powerful game. You can run one of the really top games on the iPhone platform and it will use all the RAM. So games, especially 3D games, do use huge amounts of RAM. And if you're not worried about huge 3D real-time games, as perhaps the N97 isn't, then you don't need those huge amounts of RAM. Even the most complex web pages might only need 10 megabytes of RAM for the web browser to work in, and then maybe another 10 megabytes for flashlight to kick in and play a video. So 50 megabytes of free RAM should be enough for most people. And one other comment on specs, just it's a general knowledge quiz here for Mr. Spence up in Scotland. How fast do you think, what was the processor speed of the original Cyan Series 3 palm top?
Of the original Cyan Series 3, no.
How many hundred megahertz do you think it was?
Oh, that's you know what, Steve? I'm not going to put my modesty on the line and admit to the fact of knowing that. Why don't you tell us?
You're going to boot up Wikipedia in the background and look at that.
No. I'm just going to go, I don't need to know that. I just need to know that that device, you picked it up and it just worked. You could program, you could spreadsheet, you could word process, and that's the key argument.
Did the Cyan Series 3 or any of the Cyan palm tops ever have an hourglass? Well, you had to wait. Ever?
Well, no, because David would butt your knuckles if you wrote a program in the operating system that needed you to have an hourglass.
The answer is that we're talking here about devices and complaining that something's only got a processor speed of 434 megahertz. The original Cyan Series 3, the ancestor of the ancestor of the ancestor of the N97, had a processor speed of 4 megahertz.
Woo!
Over 100 times less, and yet almost all operations on the Series 3 back in 1993 were instant. Now, obviously, the OS has got more complicated, doing a lot more things, which is why the processor speed has gone up by a factor of 100. But it just goes to show you, just because a processor speed isn't perhaps as high numerically as you might like, it doesn't mean to say it's not going to respond quickly and respond fast enough. And there are numerous examples throughout Epoch and Symbian's history to demonstrate that.
And that's absolutely right. It's all about the software and the integration into the OS as well. And, you know, Symbian has a lot of optimizations relatively low down that can be tweaked to change that kind of things in terms of addressable memory. And it's the same with any other OS as well. I mean, Windows CE has its well-known 32 megabyte memory limit on that one program can address at any one time. Now, of course, there's ways of getting around all of these. But things at that kind of low level, tweaks that get made within the lower parts of the OS and at the integration level between the hardware and the OS will have far more of an impact than raw processor speed. Clearly, if you throw more stuff at it, it's going to work faster, but you'll get a much better return on your investment or your money, if you like, if you tweak things at that level, which is one of the reasons these phones take so long to wrap up and get ready for the market. So I think we're almost out of time. We haven't mentioned the E71X, but that has come out on AT&T this week. And I think that's an issue we're going to have to address in a future podcast. But if you want to know more about that, we haven't actually got one here. Of course, we're all based in the UK. But go and check out NokiaExperts.com, where Matt Miller has been taking it apart. So without further ado, it's goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
And goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield, hopefully saving Rafe from collapsing with a croaking throat. You've done a lot of talking today, Rafe, so well done for comparing.
And it's a goodbye from me, Ronnie Corbett.